I'm alcoholic Al-Anon. My problem is Steve. My sponsor said I'm your problem too. I got sober in 87 in AA and sane in Al-Anon in 95. I consider myself twice blessed. I want to thank God and my understanding for sobering me up, and also for bringing you here tonight to hear my story, because I don't like talking to myself anymore. You see, I still drink a lot. That's all right. I just don't drink alcohol anymore. I was born a long time ago, and I think I was born alcoholic, because I had a resentment against the doctor that smacked me on the ass when I was born. I carried that into my school days. I always seemed to be picked on. I didn't like it. So I picked up on humor as a tool to, because I wasn't very big. I got beat up a lot, so I wasn't very big. So I used humor as a tool a lot to try and defuse the situation and make light of my dismal existence. Then I found that magic elixir that some of us have tried, and everything seemed to level out. I seemed to be tall, handsome, and smart, and the things that they said to me didn't seem to matter. Besides, they didn't say that much to me anymore, because I became a solitary drinker toward the end. Pretty much a 10 to 2 drinker, late in my drinking, 5 nights a week. The slippers would come out, the bottle would come out, and the cigarettes would come out, and pretty dismal existence. I did have some fun drinking, because everybody would tell me how much fun I had the night before, because I was in a blackout a lot of times. Of course, you know, alcoholics stretch the truth somewhat, and I couldn't have been that good or that bad. At least I never got caught doing it. I applaud you folks that have done your time. I was very lucky I never got caught. To this day, they haven't shown up with video evidence or DNA evidence. I did something in a blackout, which I'm very grateful for. I'd like to thank Gail for allowing me to share tonight. You know, I heard that Gail and one of her friends was road drinking one night when they were still out there, and they had some long neck bottles they were drinking, and they come up onto a roadblock, a police roadblock, and Gail says, "I got this." They tore the labels off the bottom, they stuck them on their forehead. When they got up to the police officer, he looked in there and he says, "You gals been drinking tonight?" "Oh no, officer, we're on the patch." I like that one. First time I read that, in the grapevine, I thought, I got to use that sometime. Yeah. So you're my first victim. You know, I don't talk a whole lot about drinking, because that's not what it's about. I mean, matter of fact, sometimes I wonder, I'll be sitting in the audience and the speaker will be telling some horror story, and I'll think, man, I should add that to my story. Oh, wait a minute, we're supposed to be honest in this program. So I haven't done that. I joined the Marine Corps Reserves when I got my notice for physical back in 1969, and did 20 years in the Marine Corps Reserves. Very proud to have served you folks. But I got to admit, I was drunk for 17 years of those 20. I drank quite a bit, quite often, but I was very lucky. Like I said, I didn't get in trouble. I got called up one time after Sunday, getting up, you know, really wasted, and something happened I don't remember happening. I called before the commanding officer, and he said, "If you mess up one time in six months, you're out of here." It was a blackout in uniform. I don't remember exactly what the details were, and I did get by that. I got sober shortly after that. I've been married for my whole life, it seems like. The 48 years this September, we make it. She's downstairs where the Al-Anons go, which I joined later. I'll talk about that for a minute later if I get time. Anyway, she was 18, I was 19. Her mother said it would never last. And I kept asking her about that for the first 40 years. She never did think much of that question. Anyway, they passed away now, so it's okay. So it was like 5 years of insane alcoholism. Or no, first it was 5 years of love and lust, no kids and no dogs. And then 15 years of insane alcoholism, and now 27 plus years of recovery in Al-Anon AA. I owe that to you and my God, because I can't do anything that long. I don't even like myself that much. But it goes and comes. It's kind of like a brownout once in a while. I suffer from a thinking disorder today. I'm very glad to have survived the drinking part of my life, but sometimes the thinking part of my life can be really difficult. you know, our traditions, our steps are made to keep us from killing ourselves, and our traditions are made to keep us from killing each other. But I still think about suicide once in a while, but usually not too long. Usually I go right to homicide. You know, somebody cuts me off in traffic, I want to run them down. But I haven't done that. I don't think about it too long. It just takes a millisecond to go crazy, and then I come back to my sanity and don't do it. I would have to go completely insane to drink alcohol, knowing what I know about it today. When I first got here, I was pretty angry alcoholic. I didn't know if I could stay sober. I volunteered to go to treatment, which is a really ass-backwards way of doing it. I threatened to divorce my wife 3 times if she wouldn't go to the treatment. And at the time, I worked at a place that would pay for treatment, but the facility in our town wouldn't take anybody without a concerned person back in 1987. You had to have at least one person go with you to treatment. So of the 8 men that went through the cycle that we went through, 7 of them are sober today, 1 did die drunk. I got to back up. 1 moved away, so we don't know about that one, but 6 of the 8 are sober, 1 did die drunk, and I don't know about the other guy. He moved away. That's, you know, a lot of people badmouth treatment. It worked for us. We were willing to do the work. My wife did not think I was alcoholic. She went there because they said I may have a problem with alcohol. The little 12-question test some of you may have taken, I answered every question yes. It's the only perfect score I ever got on the test to see beside that in the urine test. So I picked out that I was alcoholic, but I didn't know if I could stay sober or not. So I was very angry when I got here. I go to these damn meetings and listen to you assholes lie to me. Nobody could be that happy sober. You got to be taking something in the back room. I got to find out what that is. Those magic pills or dust or whatever they're doing. Because my life was miserable. I was terribly sad and angry and just, well, a dry alcoholic. You know, you're just a miserable person. I was anyway. But I kept coming back. And you showed me, you loved me until I could love myself. You know, the unconditional love we give each other is a miraculous thing. If you're having trouble, if you're having trouble with your sobriety, try this. If you're like me, if you put half the effort into staying sober and clean as you did into drinking, you shouldn't have any trouble staying clean and sober. There is work involved. There's no picnic. But the most wonderful thing about it is we don't have to do anything alone anymore. That's over with. That part of our life is over with. Unless we choose to be alone, we don't have to be. I take my God now into my heart. First, the God came to my head. I had a lot of head education and it almost killed me. But somewhere along the line, my higher power, my conception of my higher power, migrated from my head to my heart. And that's when I really, really did get it. You know, it's like an aha moment. You know, I've been going to meetings. I still do. I go to more than one meeting a day normally because I can. I'm retired and I can. I enjoy it. I'm not addicted to AA, although I was accused of that when I first got sober. A couple old guys called me aside one night about 3 or 4 months into the deal and said, "Man, you gotta spend a night home with your family once in a while. You're abusing your family." So I had a meeting with my alcoholic dog and my two crazy teenage kids and my Al-Anon wife. And I said, "Am I abusing you by going to meetings every night?" And they looked at me really funny and they said, "Well, let's look at the record. When you were home, you were a drunken asshole. And if you weren't drinking, you were a sober asshole. So keep going to meetings." Which I had fully intended on doing, but I was concerned what these two old guys said. And the other thing that I heard early in the program that really bothered me for a long time was, if you can't remember your last drunk, you haven't had it yet. And that tormented me terribly. I waltzed in here pretty easy. I still had job, family, no violations that I got caught for yet. And I was in the Marine Corps Reserve doing my duty as best I could as a functioning alcoholic. But so this, I cannot remember my last drunk. So what I did was, I planned my next drink. I planned my next drink, and it's going to be when I die on the steps of heaven with Jesus Christ and his dad, a glass of wine. Now, I never drank wine. I shouldn't say never. I probably did in the blackout. I don't remember. But I didn't care for wine. It didn't have enough punch. I was an effect drinker. I drank for effect. I didn't necessarily like booze. I drank to get that sense of ease and comfort that comes from a few drinks that we first experience the first time we drink, and I have never been able to get it back again. I would never judge right. I would drink too fast and get drunk, or drink too slow and be bored out of my mind. I never could get that high back. So I don't like talking much about drinking, because that's really not the deal. When I first accepted the fact that alcoholism is a mental illness, it centers in the mind, alcohol is a solution for our mental illness, that's when I was able to also, another aha moment. Now maybe you don't like being called crazy, but in my opinion, that alcoholism is a mental illness, because our mind keeps telling us drink, 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 and if we do, we know what happens when we do that. Some people don't make it back. I don't believe any alcoholic has to die for another one to get sober. That's a bunch of bullshit as far as I'm concerned. We die because we're going to die. Some die sober a long time happy, and some die don't. I don't. Some don't make it. They're still just as dead. I hope I die a long time from now sober. And if I keep doing what I've been doing, I have a much better chance. I put the cigarettes down the same day I quit drinking. In that treatment, they said, don't do it, you'll never make it. And I understand now why they said that. The specifics backs it up. Nicotine's a terrible addiction chemical. But when I was done. I had, hopefully to God, I had just enough to get me here right now. But that's not the issue. The issue is the alcohol changed me in ways I didn't like being. I actually finally grew up, my sponsor reminds me, in AA. I still have a very vivid childlike imagination that runs away every once in a while. And sometimes I'm talking when that happens and I say really dumb shit. But I can make amends for that. I'm so grateful the steps are laid out the way they are. You know, if I abuse you tonight, I will gladly give you my phone number, my sponsor, and you can report on me. He'd love to hear from you. I've had aha moments in recovery. I didn't think anybody was paying attention to my life recovery except my spouse and my kids. But there was a lady, an older lady in the group. And when I got my first year medallion, she came up to me and she whispered, gave me a hug, and whispered in my ear how proud she was of me. Which I thought that was a novel thing. Because she went on to tell me it took her 7 years to get a 1 year medallion. That lady died several years ago with 25 years sobriety. She was only my mother, but we hung out a lot together. We went to lots of meetings together. And I kind of miss her. You know, but I know she's in a better place. Her husband was an Al-Anon. They were a great couple in AA and Al-Anon, and he's now since passed away. But I have those memories. We have those wonderful memories that we can go back on. Yes, it saddens me to talk about her, because I miss her. But the more important thing is, had I not done what I had done, she wouldn't have been in my life. You know, every time I close, just about 99.9% of the time when I close my sharing at discussion meeting, I say that I love you all unconditionally, and there's nothing you can do about it. Because our book talks about that. Our book talks about that, how we must endeavor to love everyone unconditionally. I mean, I don't like everybody in AA. I'm not that that well. But I don't hate as deeply as I used to, and I don't associate. There are some people I don't associate with outside in the world, because of their lifestyle. But that doesn't mean I can't love them in here if they're trying to stay sober, because the big secret is, each one of you are helping me right now. If you're new in the program and you haven't done step 12, you're doing part of step 12 right now for me. Carry the message. I'm actually carrying the message to you, but you're here listening to this bullshit. You don't have to be here. Well, maybe you're on paper. I don't know. It doesn't matter. I used to judge those people when I first came to the program. I was just damn lucky I never got caught. Damn lucky. And they could still show up with DNA evidence. Now, what I really fear the most is the knock on the door, and I open the door and I see myself. Because I wasn't faithful to my wife. I'm not proud of that, but it happened. I seem to get 25 miles from home and become single. I'm not proud of that, but it came out in our, luckily that part of our story came out in treatment. She told me if there was anything that you had done that I don't know about, I don't want to hear about it. I said, okay. Well, I'm off the hook. Well, the loose leaf notebook, I took about a page, about two-thirds of the way in there, and I wrote down all that stuff I hadn't done. Because she had to be gone one night. It was an outpatient program at night, and she had to be gone the middle Wednesday of that five-week treatment cycle. So I wrote all that stuff down I hadn't done, and I dumped it on the group that night she was gone. Next day, she's back. They can't talk about it. Confidentiality. Can't talk about it. So I don't know any of this yet. I don't know anything about the steps or all that crap yet. I'm only 3 weeks into the treatment. You know, it's kind of like a deer in the headlights, yet, you know, red-eyed and just kind of. But I had taken care of getting it out of me. Well, 2 weeks later, they told me I had to be extended a week because I hadn't gotten honest, and she could go ahead and cycle out. But by then, she had changed. When we went to treatment, she sat there with her arms folded, her legs crossed, back in her chair, just scowling. There wasn't anything wrong with her. If I just go drink it, she'd be fine. Well, we know what fine stands for. Fouled up, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. She was fine, all right. Well, about 3 weeks or so, 4 weeks or so, she finally started to loosen up a little bit and share a little bit of her life. And matter of fact, one of the guys, one of the fathers, the Al-Anon father of a guy in the program, gave his notebook to her because he was having trouble writing down insanity. And her biggest insanity that I can remember is she swore she would never drive in a blizzard or buy me a cigarette. Well, you live in Dubuque, Iowa, there's blizzards, right? Well, the night came, the Saturday night came when I was tapping the bag and around the cigarette. It was the only time they'd ever gone on the newscast saying, do not drive under any conditions. If you need to get somewhere, we'll send in the Stonewheel Drive Club, four-wheel drive club or the Stonewheel Club. Call the fire department or the police. Do not drive. She drove to get cigarettes for me. In the blizzard, swore, did two things she swore she'd never do. That was close to the end of my drinking. And that was the major insanity that I could come up with from her, which I had gotten her to that point. She said, well, I would have gotten in trouble. Well, I told her later, I said, no, you could have gotten killed or maimed and left a drunk to raise two dogs and two kids and a dog. That's pretty crazy. Anyway, so I threatened to divorce her three times, two times drunk, one time sober. I'd been sober about a week. And I between binges, you know. And I was just stark raving sober. I said, I'm going to kill myself. I said, if you don't quit the treatment, this is over. We're done. 20-year marriage, out the door. Well, she didn't want a divorce. Crazy woman. She loved me. Well, we went to treatment, and I did that thing. And then 5 weeks into it, they said, you could go cycle out. But I had to stay another week because I hadn't gotten honest. I was never going to stay sober. Well, that night, she woke up 3 o'clock the next morning and was flipping through my notebook. I mean, I didn't give her permission to my notebook, but she had permission from the other guy to get his notebook, so she thought she could just maybe find something why they were treating me the way they were treating me. Well, I did not tear that page out, which a smart person would have, maybe. But then again, God's in the middle of this, right? She read that page, and it made her angry, and she felt really bad about it, but then she got feeling guilty. Real Christian woman, didn't like doing things that weren't right, so she called a psychologist up at the treatment center and went to talk to him all day, and well, not all day, but part of the day. And I told him I'd divorce him if he did that stuff. And they said, well, that's between you and him. You read his notebook. You had his permission. You got to apologize for doing that. You broke his anonymity. Well, she had more time to think about it and cry a little bit more. So that night, I was wasted. I was just beat. I said, I'm going to go right to bed and take a shower in the morning. I'm just shocked. She said, no, I have to talk to you. Well, the first guilt thing came out of my mind was that she had had an affair and she was going to tell me about it. That was my guilt coming up, and she had an affair. I hadn't actually dreamt that she had an affair with one of our best friends. That was my guilt coming out. That wasn't true. She just said, I read your notebook. Well, I knew what she meant by read the notebook. There was only one page in there that was, that should have burned, maybe. Anyway, and she said, I'm sorry. Yep. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 in one day. And I didn't know what I was doing. And like I say, we're living proof that this program can work and does work if you apply the principles in whichever program that you call your home program, your main program. I like to share that my AA program, I'm one leg of a three-legged stool. I'm one leg, the weakest leg. And the other two legs are my Al-Anon and my AA program. I would no sooner cut off one of my legs than I would stop one of my support programs. This isn't my Al-Anon talk, I have one. But I have to mention that because it's a very, very important part of me. I stayed sober for the first probably year and a half on less than one step. How do you do that? The first half of step one, I knew I was powerful over alcohol. I had no doubt in my mind whatsoever. But my life was not unmanageable, neither was my wife. Till later, till she got really grounded in Al-Anon, then my wife became unmanageable. And then the middle part of step 12, I mentioned it before, that you're doing that with me right now if you're new, or if you're a visitor, if you maybe don't know whether you need to be here or not, or maybe you're a friend of a friend of a friend. You're carrying the message to me. You know, I try and look at the faces in the room and make contact. Because to me, every living thing has an aura of energy surrounding it. Some is positive, some is negative. But you're all giving off some energy, and I'm absorbing it. I'm still a seed. I'm taking it all in. I've never left a meeting feeling worse than I went in. Never. Now, I've left the meeting wondering what the hell the meeting was about. But that wasn't the meeting. That was me. I used to like to deer hunt quite a bit. Mostly, I didn't really much like hunting so much as getting the meat. But anyway, up here it's cold. So I got a black powder rifle, and down in southern Iowa, you can hunt with a black powder rifle in October. So I went and practiced, got the gun, went and practiced, and went down to my brother's place in southern Iowa. Burlington, Iowa is where my home is, but I live in Dubuque now. And I was laying out there for a couple of days and didn't get anything. So I knew there was a meeting downtown Burlington every night at 8 o'clock. So that third day I got cleaned up and ran downtown and go in there, and there's about 10 to 8 maybe, two or three people, women in there talking, and I went back in the coffee in the bathroom room was straight through the room, it was a big long room. So I got a cup of coffee and took care of business, came out, and now it's 8 o'clock and the meeting's already starting. There's 6 or 7 women sitting around, I didn't think anything of it. I had a jacket and hat and my coffee there, and I was still drinking coffee this time. Now I'm a teetotaler. I drank my way out right out of coffee. I'm powerless over that too. So this lady said, "Are you looking for a meeting?" And I said, "Well, yes, I'm here for a meeting." She said, "Well, it's a woman's meeting." So I started getting leave. Because I'm not a woman, don't care to be. Not to say anything wrong with them, I just don't want to be a woman. Thank you very much. I have a hard enough time being a man. I do have a feminine side though. I can change my mind. Right mid-sentence. So I started to leave. She said, "No, we took a group conference when you're in the back, and we never seen you before, even though it's my hometown. I hadn't gone to meetings, at least that meeting I hadn't gone to, in several years." And they said, "If you really, really need a meeting, stay. We open the meeting for you." Now, that is a big God incident in my life. And the reason I share it is to let you know that I'm not a meeting crasher, but I needed a meeting that night. And they were so gracious to let me stay. And one of the readings, something caused me to start talking about my relationship with my addict son, who I was getting ready to kill because he was doing things I didn't want him to do, interfering with my life with my wife and dog, and I didn't like it. Well, I shared a whole lot about my bad relationship with my teenage son, and I was going to go to Al-Anon, where the really, really sick ones go. I had made up my mind, but I hadn't gone yet. I was still resisting. So I really wasn't that sick yet. You want to kill your own kid? That's not too sick, is it? Two of the women there that night were having difficulties with their teenage daughters, the same thing. Now, I have no doubt in my mind, had I not been there that night, they wouldn't have talked about that. So we never know who we're going to affect. I couldn't wait to get back to my brother's house where I was staying to check the schedule, and I would not have gone downtown that night if I had known it was a woman's meeting. I'm not a meeting crasher. My own sponsor don't like specialty meetings. I think they're great. I think specialty meetings are outstanding. If you have two people that have a special life, that they have difficulties associated with their life, and they need to talk, I think it's great. I think it's absolutely wonderful. The more meetings, the better. getting back to the fact that I've never left a meeting feeling worse than I went in, that night I was pretty, again, like the deer in the headlights thing about, wow, you know, it's like, and of course, I don't know how about you people, but I have a slow brain. And it was a long time before I put all that together, how God worked in there and took care of that. Because, like I said, I did join Al-Anon very quickly after that. Told my son he could no longer live with us. And he got clean a couple years later, and I had nothing to do with it other than kicking his ass out. We have a fine relationship today, a wonderful relationship. I've got 6 grandkids, 3 grandsons, and 3 granddaughters. He has 3 girls from 3 different women. 2 are beautiful black women. I have 2 Milano baby daughters, granddaughters that I love to death. And right in my hometown, our oldest son has 3 sons. Matter of fact, tomorrow, I'm going to miss my regular meeting tomorrow because I'm going to go watch a 4-year-old and 8-year-old play soccer. Talk about a hoot. Especially a 4-year-old. He's like, wow. The ball, he's not much taller than the ball. He's a little dinky guy for his age. It's like, oh, what a blast. And yeah, just fun as hell. And I'm alive and I can do that. You know, I wouldn't have been alive probably had I kept drinking. I certainly wouldn't have any relationships with the family. And I owe that to you. You know, of myself, I am nothing. You know, I need you. I need this program desperately. I need both of my programs. I do go to NA too with our cousins. Because I'm an addict. I believe my drug of choice is alcohol. But I get addicted to everything I do. Every single thing I do, I get addicted to it. Now, not all are bad. And if they are bad, I got to look at them and take corrective action. But the main thing is that we can do what I cannot. There is a lot of power in here. And I mentioned the aura of energy. Just to sit and think about, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of meetings going on right now all over the world. They may not be speaker meetings. But there's people together trying to share their recovery 1 hour at a time. I had this opportunity to speak in New Mexico last month on the way back from South Padre Island. I'm kind of wimpy. I've been doing a couple months a year in South Padre Island in January and February. I don't like being so cold. And my wife likes reading books and walking the beach, so it's kind of a win-win deal. I go to a lot of meetings and she goes and does that stuff. And anyway, I had a chance to speak in New Mexico on the way back last month. And when I told the guy how long I've been sober, he says, man, you've been sober over 10,000 days. And I'm thinking, really? And he's right. He was right. What had my friend get on his Google computer phone. And it was like 10. It was March 13th. It was 10,016 days. I haven't kept up on it. But I like to look at it this way, you know. If the days are just dominoes on the table, one drink, they all fall over. They're not stacked vertical, they're horizontal. So you're all my dominoes. You're all my pieces of my... You are now part of the mosaic of my life. You are pieces to my puzzle now, forevermore. And I appreciate that. Because I'm very lucky. I think back when I was a kid, they gave you the polio vaccine shot, the big old round dealie. I think they gave me an injection with a phonograph needle, too, because I haven't shut up since. And my sponsor and some other friends and some of my sponsees call me on that occasionally. I enjoy speaking. I enjoy people. I got to back up. I really get nervous up here. I know it's just my story, but and I'm not trying to impress anybody. I'm just trying to let God flow through me and share a little experience, strength, and hope with a little humor like I did earlier. Because, life is too grim to go through it with the pursed lips and the wrinkled forehead. I travel quite a bit. My wife and I do flea markets. And Marquette, Iowa has a flea market 5 times a year across the prairie. And I met a little man there, actually another alcoholic, recovered alcoholic, met him first. Old George, little bitty guy. He chewed tobacco and smoked cigarettes at the same time. George. Whatever. He loved pugs. And I think they're an ugly dog, but whatever. Something's wrong with their face. I don't know what it is. Anyway, they raised registered pugs. Anyway, we go to meetings over in Prairie du Chien on Friday night. My wife would babysit his dog, because his wife was gone working. And we go to meetings over in Prairie du Chien. And we found out that there was a meeting. We do another flea market at Gay's Mill, Apple Harvest Festival, last week in September, weekend of September. So we heard there was a meeting there at the foot of the hill there, at the church. So we were all excited about going to that meeting. Well, that night, got there, and it was raining. And we didn't get set up in time. I looked at my watch, about 8:30. I assumed it was an 8 o'clock meeting. We didn't have no schedule. We just heard word of mouth that there was a meeting there. Well, the first year, just didn't happen. So I made up my mind for sure next year I was going to go. Well, George got a really bad cold, and he couldn't go, didn't want to go. And it was raining again that night. But I got ready, got my rain gear on, and I walked down the hill, and I found a church with a light on, and I walked around the church and found a door that was open, stumbled down the stairs into the basement, because most meetings are church basements. Found a light switch, turned on, looked around for a door or a drawer or a box or something that had an AM emblem on it, or an LM emblem on it, didn't find any. And about 5 minutes later, this young kid stuck his head in the door, and he says, "Is this where the AA class is?" I said, "Well, there's an AA meeting at 8 o'clock, I think." He says, "I'll be right back." He said, "Well, how long did it last?" I said, "An hour." He said, "I'll be right back." So I chased him out the door and down the steps, and his buddies had dropped him off. I said, "Well, you can invite them in too." Well, they were going to go do some more research, I think, is what they did. So they were going to come back and pick him up in an hour. So with having no literature, I'm not a real brilliant individual, believe me, but I've been to so many meetings I had memorized how it works in the preamble. So I did the general prayer opening and rattled that stuff off. And I found out from talking to him, because just me and him, that he had been court ordered to go to AA before. Seems like he had a hard time keeping his hands off his girlfriend when he would drink. So he went through the legal system once, and he was back in the pot again, on paper, court ordered to go to these AA classes. So I talked a little bit about my insanity and my drinking life, and about 8:30, a big man came in down the stairs. I mean, he was big. And he was not in a very happy mood. He was scowling, and he was very... You know, when people walk, sometimes you can tell that they're really angry. He didn't yell too loud, but he said, "What are you doing in my church?" A good question, I guess. I said, "We're having an AA meeting." He says, "I've been pastor here 9 years. There never has been an AA meeting, and there never will be an AA meeting in my church. Get out of my church." I said, "I am really, really sorry. I had information that there was a meeting here tonight." And he had had a chance to kind of peruse the room. We hadn't ransacked the place. The only thing that was disheveled was a little water around our feet because it was raining when we came in. That was it. That was the amount of destruction, or whatever you want to call it, to the church. Painted cement floor in the basement. Well, I said, "I am really, really sorry. We'll be leaving now." And the young man says, "Well, they aren't coming back for a half hour to pick me up." I said, "Oh, yeah." I said, "This group of his guys are going to pick him up in a half hour." Well, he said, "You know," he grabbed a chair and pulled it out, and he sat right down, right next to me. He said, "When I was going to college to be a minister, I volunteered at the Veterans Hospital here in Wisconsin. And I administered to a lot of alcoholics and drug addicts." He said, and he sat there and he told myself, me and that young man, about the mental illness of alcoholism and drug addiction, how the mind plays tricks on us or convinces us that we are not addicts, we are not alcoholics, we can have a little bit, we can do this or that. If one feels good, four is better. And he told me about, and this young man, about the psychological and emotional effects that drugs have on us. No meeting in my church. To me, that is a God incident. Two of them, actually. First, that I was willing to go out in the rain to find a meeting, but there's no meeting in my church. I mentioned George. He did pass away several years later. He just never could seem to get away from the nicotine either. he had other problems too from Vietnam, other than just I think he got into that Agent Orange stuff, and he never was right very healthy after that. But again, and also the nicotine was he did quit chewing, but he never did get away from the cigarettes. Which is, you know, my own brother smoked himself to death 3 weeks ago. He didn't inhale. He said it's not the cigarettes, it's the car parts he worked on his whole life and factories he worked in. But, I had to pull away from my brother because of his lifestyle. I loved him, but I didn't like him, you know, because of the way he lived. He was a great grandpa and a great great grandpa though too. As a matter of fact, he had a third great coming in a couple months. He would have been three generations, three great, great 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 and great great. My nephew, his oldest son, fell off a bridge in Iowa City a year and a half ago, drunk or high or suicide, I don't know for sure, but he didn't make it either. He would ice him to take him to meetings, I would, and it just never worked. And not all of us make it. Not all of us make it to our death sober. But that, you know, that's no big deal. I mean, we're all going to die sometime, hopefully a long time from now. I mentioned the dog for a minute. It seemed like, well, like I mentioned, the first 4 years of Love and Lust, it's me and her, was great. Then we got, every time we got a dog or a kid, I dropped one rung down on the love ladder. You know, first we had a dog, and I didn't like the dog. Matter of fact, the first dog we had was kind of this accidental thing, and I took it to a parking lot and let it go. I'm not proud of that, but I was jealous of a goddamn dog. Then we get a kid. You can't leave them in a parking lot. Well, you can, but they're not supposed to. They have laws against that kid. Leaving those dogs ain't so bad. There are probably laws against that, too. Anyway, we get a little dog, a little fluffy white thing. I'm sure they picked it up. Maybe the chef at the Chinese restaurant. But, well, no, wait. That's... See, I told you. Didn't I tell you before? Sometimes the shit that comes out of my mouth, I'm like, why would I say that? It's actually more like Taiwan or whatever. Okay. I don't know. Vietnamese, I don't know. I was like four legs down on the love ladder, jealous of my own kids and dogs. Well, I'd take and cuss the dog when I was a drunk, didn't care for the dog, jealous of the dog. Well, about a year and a half sober, well, right away I stopped paying attention to the dog because I was focusing on recovery. So about a year and a half sober, then I'm still addicted to football. You know, the football season's on, and if I'm home and I'm able to, I got the ice and the soda. I don't need soda anymore, but the ice and back then I had ice and soda and my snacks and the TV controller and the TV tray. Well, this one Sunday morning, dog came up to me and she rubbed her nose on my leg, and I picked her up and pulled her in my lap. And she was scared of me when I was drinking, and she had every right to be because I resented the dog. But she took her last breath in my lap. Unconditional love that we give each other in the program. You think dogs can sense that? The change in me, why she chose me to do that with. I have no doubt in my mind that that's another God instance in my life. Because had I kept acting the way I was acting, there's no way that she came around me, because she didn't. She didn't come near me when I was drunk. Even sober, she didn't come near me because I was angry. I was stark raving sober between drugs. Like I said, I checked myself out as a periodic. Because I mentioned 5 nights a week, 10 to 2 drinking. But I always felt like I just didn't fit. That I wanted to be somewhere else with somebody else doing something else at some other time. I just never seemed to fit in. Get a little bit of alcohol in my system, or even thinking about it. Thinking about drinking would give me a little bit of a euphoric high in the head, in the brain. And the brain would say, okay, you're going to get it, you're going to get it, you're going to get it. And I didn't, just until recently, I haven't came up with the fact that I abused drugs too. The over-the-counter drugs, painkillers, decongestants. I mean, I suffered terribly from hangovers. I mean, I would drink, I would eat that stuff like candy. Instead of one in 6 hours, how about six in 1 hour? That'd be about right. Huh? So I abused over-the-counter drugs and just finally came to that conclusion not long ago. I'm a slow learner. You know, this program is for people who are willing to do the work. We all know people or have known people that have tried this out and for whatever reason just don't seem to fit. Well, I waited 14 months to come out to my brother. We drank a lot together. A lot. He took me to my first stripper bar in California. My first love affair, other than my wife. We would go out drinking all night and then have breakfast at Denny's. And I always loved Denny's. I will always love Denny's. They don't have any in Dubuque. I wish they did. Anyway, I waited 14 months before I came out to my brother because, first of all, I didn't know if I could stay sober. And there was a lot of thinking behind our actions together. He was 8 years older than me, 9 years older than me. And he moved away and I got married and we just missed passed each other up for about 10 years. Then we hooked up and I was on 2 week training in California and I was there for a weekend and anyway, that particular time. Anyway, he said, I said, I'm a recovered alcoholic. I've been sober 14 months. What we've recovered from is the effect of alcohol on our body. I will never be cured until I'm dead. Matter of fact, until I'm dead about 3 days, it'll take about that long to settle down. My sponsor says. So, he said, I thought I was alcoholic when I was young, but I don't drink that much anymore. Which it really just didn't, for some reason, you know, every once in a while somebody says something and you just don't seem to get all the way in there. And I just couldn't, because I knew he did other drugs, funny cigarettes, homemade cigarettes, and other things, pills of sorts. So, that, you know, he's an addict, you know, but he wasn't an alcoholic. When he was young, he drank a lot. Okay. One of the times he was drinking me, and he wasn't young when he was drinking me, he was older than me, but he just finally just passed away, and I'll miss him. But the main thing is that we need to do our best to try and carry the message out there into the public to see what a recovered person looks like. Try and present the best image we can. Not be phony about it. I'm not saying that. Put on an act. But to be genuine. The topic this morning's meeting was gratitude. And I went through a stage of, like I said, I was a very angry alcoholic for a long time. Till I read the Thoughts of the Day in the 24-Hour book, which is not a approved literature, I know. But the January 6th Thoughts of the Day finally got me right between the eyes. It was my decision to give up drinking. You know, I'm the one that's going to, unless you hold me down and pour it down my throat, it's my decision. And by God's grace, I will never put any more chemicals in my body without strict doctor supervision. I have taken a couple things since I've gotten sober under strict doctor supervision. And when the pain was gone, the pills were gone. Because I was diagnosed with ADD 8 years sober. Well, I went to my regular doctor for a physical once a year. After I got out of the Marine Corps, every year I still got a physical. And he said, "How are you doing?" And I said, "You know, Doc, I feel like shooting Shirley and putting a gun in my mouth. What do you think?" Whoa, that's pretty severe. He said, "Well, are you having trouble?" "I had a little trouble at work and yada, yada, yada." He says, "Maybe you need to see a psychologist." Great. I'm 8 years sober now, I'm nuts. But I was honest with him. He was the same doctor that gave me the physical and the interest in the treatment. And I'd gone to him for 8 years, every year before that. after that. So he knew me very well. He said, you know, you should at least make an appointment. So I dragged my wife into the appointment. And 20 minutes into the diagnosis, or into the meeting, she says, you have ADD and you're clinically depressed. We'll give you, you know, said what ADD meant. She says, we'll give you something for the clinical depression. You go back to work and tell them to get off your ass and get some help for you and don't fire you and whatever. See, that's what I was worried about, being fired, losing a 25-year career where I worked. 8 years sober, 28 at that time again. So, anyway, I went back and they kind of did lighten up a little bit. But they did try me on this mild antidepressant, and I didn't like it. The side effects were unacceptable to me. And we were out of town doing a flea market, and I forgot to take them for like 5 days. And I got back and called the nurse, and she said, well, if you had any, they said you could get a really bad migraine and die if you stop taking them, cold turkey. But I had neither symptom. So she said, well, don't take them anymore. Because I told her I didn't like the side effects. I didn't think they did anything anyway. Well, then another year went by, and they got on my case again, and so we went back and tried something different, plus some other thing that they had tried for people that have narcolepsy also helped people with ADD. Well, by the time they got up to dose level on this other thing, let's see, it caused heart failure, liver damage, and a few other things. But I wanted to be a better employee, so I tried it. So a month went by. Finally, she gets me up to dose level, and I go to work and I can't do anything. I did parts catalog editing for diesel engines. When you go in this little, you see a little part over here and a number over here and a bunch of other scrap. Well, it was pretty tedious work, and I couldn't do nothing then. So I called her up and said, my boss said I was 35% efficient at a 10% error factor, and now I'm doing nothing. You think they'll fire me now? We'll get you out of there. So if you wrote me a prescription to get out of there, to get off the one thing. And I said, my wife and I have been talking about it, and I don't want to be a drug addict on prescription drugs. They said, if I can't be working, I'm not going to work drug-free. And that's what happened. I got a medical disability and retired a few years ago, but I didn't get fired. Another God incident in my life, had I not gotten sober, I wouldn't have had that job to retire from. And I'm very fortunate that I was honest enough to go see that doctor about the other problems, and now I have ADD. So I'm not wrapped too tight, and my mind goes all over the place. Like, look at the squirrel. What day is it? You know, somebody brought me a T-shirt back when they were out of Door County, and brought me a T-shirt back. And said, isn't this a wonderful day? Look at the squirrel. You know. So the main thing is we must not take ourselves so damn serious. You know, I'm not taking light of the fact that this is a deadly disease. It will kill us. It's going to kill me. Hopefully, sometime, if you don't, later on, I'll die of natural causes. Might laugh myself to death because I got one really warped sense of humor. My wife and I spend a lot of time together. It's wonderful. Well, most of us. Anyway, I'll be driving or somewhere doing, and I'll just start laughing. Spontaneously laughing. And she'll say, what's so funny? I'll say, you don't think it's funny. So I may do it a couple more times, and she'll ask me again, what's so funny? I'll say, okay. I'll tell her what I'm laughing about. Guess what? She doesn't think it's funny. Because we, you know, men and women are from Venus and Mars or some damn bullshit like that. And we just don't think alike, you know. And I'm so grateful for the Al-Anon program that has come up with the statement that you could be right. It's one of our Al-Anon banners. You could be right. Damn right I'm right. Only when I'm not wrong. And then we got a good relationship, though. She lets me make all the important decisions. She just tells me which ones are important or not. I usually say a little bit more about Al-Anon. That's where the really, really sick ones go. If you love an alcoholic and addict, you might want to try it. You might want to try it. Not that we have to tolerate unacceptable behavior from those people. Not that we have to do things for other people that they need to do for themselves. Enabling when you're doing things for other people they need to do for themselves. It's learning how to detach with love, not hate or anger or resentment or fear, and to learn that no is a full sentence. You know, it's very disarming when someone tries to get you. You know, they're trying to, don't say maybe or later or no. That's just pretty much what part of no don't you understand? That when that came out, I thought, I still wasn't an Al-Anon yet, so I didn't get it until later. Anyway, to me, it's a very important tool Like I say, I feel very, very honored by God's grace to be able to come up here tonight from Dubuque and share and tell a little bit about my life. Again, I will happily give you my sponsor's phone number if you'd like to have it. We'd love to hear from you. I was actually scheduled a speaker a couple of years ago, and I got really sick the day before, so he came up with my wife and filled in for me. So you may have heard Dominic Sweeney from the Zwingo, Iowa talk a couple of years ago. Anyway, I just hope that I was able to give you some glimpse into what recovery can be like. I'm still a crazy guy, I'm just not insane. And I like the acronym for HOPE. Happy Our Programs Exist. If you haven't heard it yet today, I love you unconditionally and there's nothing you can do about it.